Methyl bromide is a toxic gas that has been used successfully by a number of industries to combat harmful organisms. However, methyl bromide has been banned by international treaty, and only those industries that have been granted exemptions may still use it. This leads us to ask, can the strawberry industry survive without its methyl bromide?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 749th edition of the Food Chain right here on News Talk Radio. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends over there in Paphos who are tuned in as we stream along in the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio, with our very own Miss Idaho, Nikki James, on the boards. Hello, Nikki.
Good morning.
Folks, methyl bromide is a toxic gas that kills living organisms and depletes the Earth's protective layer of ozone. The gas is thought to be so bad, 196 governments agreed to its elimination by signing the Montreal Protocol. Methyl bromide is also a very effective tool that has been used successfully by a number of industries. One industry that has benefited immensely from its use of methyl bromide is the strawberry industry. Though now banned by international treaty, the strawberry industry continues its use of methyl bromide through special exemptions. This leads us to ask, can the strawberry industry survive without methyl bromide? And as long as we're on this trail, exploring this subject, let's take it one notch further and ask, can industry survive without toxicity? Here to help us dig for an answer, we have Art Greathead, who's a retired UC University of California soil scientist and crop advisor. Art, welcome to the Food Chain.
Thank you.
Got to get right up on that microphone there. There you go.
Okay.
There you go. So what does a crop advisor do besides advise a crop, and what is your specialty in that regard?
Yeah. Well, Extension was originally organized to serve as a go-between in the field between information and developments which the universities and the USDA develop and the grower. There was a time there where the work that was being done was not reaching the field. And so a number of years ago, Extension was developed to be essentially the go-between. There's been some developments since then in terms of what Extension is responsible for, but initially that was our job.
Well, and speaking of a number of years ago, Art, how long have you been doing that?
I came to work in Salinas, in the Salinas office in August of 1950.
1950, so right after World War II.
Right after World War II.
Okay, good. So, and cooperative extensions exist throughout the United States, right?
Yes, it does.
And it's so there you are. You're the person who is responsible for, I think of Green Acres. Remember the television show Green Acres?
Yes, I do.
And they had a cooperative extension.
They had the extension person there. Yeah, that was quite a show.
Okay. So you're retired from the active extension. You're now you're kind of a consultant?
Well, I retired in the last day of 1988 and then went back to consulting about half-time for about 17 years, and then because of a difficult health situation on my wife's part, why I finally just pulled the plug and said, this is it.
This is it. Okay. Well, you're a plant pathologist. You know, when somebody says, I'm a plant pathologist, what does that mean?
Well, it's not too much different from a human pathologist. I work with plant diseases.
Okay. And there are a lot of them, right?
There are many. There are many.
And you were working with the plant diseases of 60 different plants?
At one time, I had a responsibility for the plant disease work on all of the crops raised in Monterey and Santa Cruz County, which was well in excess of 60. Yeah.
Okay, good.
An impossible job.
An impossible job, like most jobs. Well, let's go back to the strawberry industry. By my calculation, which who knows how accurate that is, the USA is now growing about 3 billion pounds of strawberries every year.
That's probably very accurate, yes.
3 billion pounds. You know, folks, if we could dip every one of those strawberries into chocolate and sell them on the street corner, we could probably pay for the national debt.
Yeah,
I mean, that's a huge number of strawberries.
That's a huge number. And California produces, I understand now, somewhere in excess of 80% of the nation's supply.
Well, from what growers have told me, Mr. Greathead, you were really in on some of the beginnings of the modern strawberry industry. Because, and I'd like to, if you can, take us back to before the days of methyl bromide and tell us what the strawberry industry was like without that.
Right. Prior to World War II, there was a small industry in California made up managed by a large number of very small growers, many of them of Japanese descent. When the World War II
That was kind of a fresh market berry, right? You sold it to your neighbors?
Almost entirely a fresh market berry for at least local, pretty much local consumption.
Right.
When World War II came along, of course, many of the Japanese families were moved out, and the strawberry industry, what there was of it, dropped way off. After the war, then many of these Japanese families and others came back and got into the business, but again, on a relatively limited basis.
What was it that was limiting the industry at the time?
Several things. One was just the intense amount of handwork that it took to do. Secondly, they were varieties which were very soft. If you got them very far across the county line, why, you were...
So you had to pick them and eat them on the way out of the field,
that's,
right?
That's just about right. They were not suitable for the national market, which California enjoys now at all. And it began to grow. And as it came out of the war years, of course, the price of the strawberries themselves went sky high. People were anxious for that fruit. And by that time, the university, which had sort of a fledgling breeding program, brought forth several varieties which were far superior, and as a matter of fact, those that are listening will remember the Lassen and the Shasta varieties,
right,
which were very, very much superior to anything which had been grown. And it got to the point where, right after the war years, about 1950, when every doctor, lawyer, businessman, carpenter, or whatever it was, wanted to get into the strawberry industry and establish a growing operation of their own.
Because the strawberries were worth money now.
They were worth money, and I had, during the early 1950s, probably 5-6 people a day coming in, wanting to go into the strawberry industry, knowing nothing about it, and I got caught in that wave, having to deal with them, and so I spent probably a high percentage of my time in those early years working with this group.
Just like the farm advisor on Green Acres then, right?
Well, I hope a little bit.
A little
better,
bit better, okay. Well, you know, from what I understand, the early strawberry farmers had to be kind of itinerants.
They did. One of the first things that we had to...
Maybe we should hold that. We're going to have to take a quick break. But it's such a significant part of the story that I think we should hold it till after this break. And today, folks, we're talking about strawberries, but not really. What we're really talking about is the toxicity of industry. With respect to strawberry industry, the toxicity we're talking about is methyl bromide, a poisonous gas that is used to sterilize the soil. But their other industries have their toxicities as well. And we're trying to come to grips with the fact that, with the question that, can the strawberry industry survive without its methyl bromide gas? And furthermore, can the industry at large survive without toxicity? Do stay tuned. We will be right back with Art Greathead and you and me.
Get this. The average acre of farmland in or near the city limits may earn in excess of $123,000 per year. To learn how so much can be earned from so little, pick up a copy of Metro Farm, the guide to growing for big profit on a small parcel of land. Metro Farm is the PMA Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner by Michael Olson that contains over 500 pages of photos, charts, checklists, illustrations, and in-depth interviews. Metro Farm will teach you how to develop a strategy, survey markets, select crops, organize business, establish production, prepare for market, and make the sale. Metro Farm will teach you how others just like you earn a good living by growing high-value specialty crops for people who are truly appreciative. Abraham Lincoln said, "The greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living from a small parcel of land." Get in on that future today. Pick up a copy of Metro Farm at bookstores, lawn and garden supply stores, 1-800-624-BOOK, or at www.metrofarm.com.
Hey, we're back. This is the Food Chain Radio Program. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating Radio, and today we have what I consider to be one of our more interesting guests, Art Greathead, who has been a crop advisor and a plant pathologist, retired now. He started way back in 1950, and at the peak of his career was responsible for the diseases that impact over 60 crops here in California. So a man that knows his P's and Q's about crops. And what we're talking about is the strawberry industry in particular right now and the early formation of that industry. And as I was saying before the break, I understood it that early strawberry farmers kind of had to be on the move all the time. They were kind of like gypsy farmers or itinerants. Why would that be, Art?
Well, I think I talked a little bit about earlier so many people wanting to get into the strawberry industry, excuse me, in the early 1950s that I dealt with. And one of the very, one of the first things and important things that I would tell them was you got to be very selective on your ground. And there were about three things that they had to watch out first. Number one, never to go on a piece of ground which had ever been farmed to potatoes or tomatoes, which were the two major crops that were a concern in the area. And the other thing is never go back on old strawberry ground.
Well, that kind of took care of a lot of ground, didn't it?
That took care of a fair amount of ground.
Why is that? Why do you tell
me? Well,
that?
There were several things. One of the major diseases which we were concerned about was a soil-borne disease called Verticillium wilt. Verticillium wilt was a very persistent soil-borne organism, and it was deadly to strawberries. And it was not unusual during those early development years when a grower could just simply lose his whole planting the first year. Everything would just collapse and die.
And that's a very expensive proposition.
That's a very expensive proposition. And those were the years when we kept strawberry, any individual strawberry planting in the ground for four or perhaps sometimes more years.
Oh, really? Which is significantly different than what we the way we do it now.
Significantly different. Well, it was the development. Part of this was due to the development, a big push in the frozen foods industry for strawberries, and a lot of the fruit at that point went into the frozen food industry for
and
jams.
They probably didn't have the capability of shipping fresh very far anyway at that time, right?
No, they didn't. There were attempts to, and with the two varieties which I mentioned, the Lassen and the Shasta, they could ship them east, but what the buyers in the east used to tell me was that they really only ever sold somewhere between 60 and 70% of the fruit they received. There was so much decay in Miami.
Right. You know, I recall hearing the story of the first attempt to ship lettuce to the East Coast.
Right.
And iceberg lettuce. Well, they put a bunch of lettuce in a boxcar and loaded it up with ice.
Yeah.
By the time it got to the East Coast, they had lettuce soup.
They just had to pour it out of the rail car.
Yeah. So that didn't work. So with respect to keeping on the move then, you couldn't plant where strawberries had been planted before, nor potatoes, no tomatoes. Where did they plant?
Well, they were able to find some grounds on the flat, but much of the industry during those years developed on the hillsides and the slopes, which had not been farmed, or if they irrigated farming.
Mm-hmm.
If they had, it was only very, very briefly. And so we saw the hillsides in north Monterey County and north and Santa Cruz County.
So it became the farmers started farming the hillsides, the sand dunes. The kind of itinerant sand dune farmers, right?
Yeah, and that accomplished several other things, but that's where it went, a lot of it.
And then when did methyl bromide come onto the scene?
Well,
was it one of those gases that were developed during, you know, the munitions race in World War II then?
It was. Methyl bromide's been around for a number of years for several other uses. As a matter of fact, I was reading this morning and didn't realize it myself that at one time in the early parts of the century, it had actually been used for fighting fires. I don't know how, but it was used for fighting fires. But it was used.
That's interesting because it's a gas, isn't it?
It's a
lighter than air gas?
At room temperature and at sea level,
mm-hmm.
It is gas. Actually, under compression, it becomes a liquid, and that's how it's handled today as a liquid. But it had been used, I guess, off and on around, but the strawberry industry, a little bit in the ornamentals industry for very small trials and very small plots.
Mm-hmm.
And was not really used too much because it really isn't all that good disease controlling agent.
Oh, why not? I thought it killed everything.
No, methyl bromide has its limits in this regard. It had, however, tremendous capabilities of killing weed seed,
mm-hmm.
and some other pathogens as well. But verticillium wilt, which was the major
problem,
disease to be concerned about at that time, was not amenable to control with methyl bromide. However, and so the first work that was done here with solid fumigation on strawberries was really done with chlorpicrin.
Chlorpicrin, right.
And the first trials that, field trials that went in, I helped establish, and we had to put it on by hand, and that was quite an experience. However,
and here you are living, right?
Yeah, I'm living. But very quickly, chlorpicrin was recognized for its capabilities, and then came the mixing of the two disease control
and weed control,
and then with the methyl bromide, the addition of methyl bromide, then the weed control.
Okay,
and it was very, very effective. The combination was just such a turnaround,
and it really did begin the turnaround of an industry. Then from a few little farmers, and to it gave a tool for everybody to actually moved down off the sand dunes, right?
It did. It was shortly, well, go back a little bit in history. By 1957 or 58, the strawberry production, particularly in the frozen fruit market, had gotten into an overproduction issue, which obviously nobody ever expected. And within 2 or 3 months, the price of strawberries, frozen fruit strawberries, dropped from 17 cents a pound in the field to down to around six and a half.
And nobody's making any money.
And nobody was making any money.
We'll pick this story up when we come back. Folks, this is The Food Chain. Michael Olson here with Art Greathead, who is a retired plant pathologist, in on the beginning of the development of the modern strawberry industry. Can this industry survive without pests, without poison, without toxicity? Can any industry survive without toxicity? Right back. Do stay tuned. Well, to market, to buy a fresh strawberry, but can that strawberry be produced without methyl bromide, chlorpicrin, methyl iodide, without poison? What do you think? I've been hogging my guest, Art Greathead, for a while, and I guess I should offer you the opportunity to talk with him as well. The phone number's today, 831-479-1080. That's 479-1080 in the 831 area code. Talking about the evolution of the strawberry industry and how methyl bromide gas and its sister chlorpicrin made it possible for strawberry farmers to stop moving around all the time and move down off the sand dunes into the valley floor. Art, that must have been a huge leap for the industry.
Well, it really was a major point use of soil fumigation, one could eliminate several of the major the major very obvious problems, but also we found that we were not only controlling the verticillium wilt and the weeds, but found out that the strawberries responded in other ways, very positively to the use of these gases, and for a reason which, after a great deal of research, indicated that there were other pathogens in the soil which were not as devastating as verticillium, but also had an influence on the root systems, the function of the root systems, and
the limitation,
the limited growth, the limited vigor, and that kind of thing. And so it was not just a case of it expanded because of the vert, of course, but it expanded because the It cleaned up the ground from a lot of minor, so-called minor things, and allowed the strawberries to grow much more uniformly, grow much more vigorously, and it was something that was pretty obvious after they began fumigating.
Holy smokes, look at this strawberry plant. My goodness sakes, yay! So we went from a little industry to an industry that's producing 3 billion pounds of fresh strawberries. Oh my goodness, ladies and gentlemen, if we could just, like I said earlier, dip each one of those berries, we'd have it made.
Yeah.
And so we moved off the hills and onto the flats, and it became a huge industry.
Yeah. Well, if you look around, you'll find that there's still a lot of strawberries on the sandy hills of both.
Right.
There weren't the huge acreages available for strawberry production on the hill. There were smaller acreages, and down on the flat, particularly in the, late or mid to late 70s and early 80s, they began to realize that some of the grounds which we traditionally eliminated as possibilities for development for strawberries, and at that time then larger growers, larger farms were developed that had the, first of all, had the land, but also had the financial base to move up in production. And of course, there are other things that were involved in that increase. One is our method of irrigation.
Sure, and the varieties. And
varieties.
Yeah, there's a lot of technological developments.
Absolutely. Which were done.
Well, what about the other crops? Because it's not just the strawberry industry that has benefited from the use of this gas. It's been other industries as well, correct?
Yes, that's true. Interestingly enough, as small an industry as the Brussels sprouts industry has mm-hmm. been, that benefited from it because the fumigation of their plant beds where they grew plants for transplanting, in which the disease clubroot had entered in and was a real problem, allowed them to produce clean planting stock, even for something like Brussels sprouts.
And strawberries also benefit greatly from the nursery use of methylbromide, correct?
Very, very much so. The nurseries being located, plant nurseries being located out of the area here, located in largely in Northern California, but also in some of the San Joaquin Valley areas.
Mm-hmm.
It was no use cleaning up the ground here if you brought in plants which were carrying some of the same
kind
thing
of diseases,
reintroducing.
Right.
And so the plant growing industry very quickly developed when fumigation developed here. They very quickly adapted that to
sure.
the plant growing industry.
So now we have this toxic chemical or gas that has been, I guess it's a liquid that to start with, but it's used on all kinds of different things, asparagus, tobacco. It's used in the medical industries. It's used as a prophylactic for international commerce.
Mm-hmm.
When you bring in a pallet full of widgets, they gas it and kill all the bugs in the pallets.
Yeah, I guess methylbromide is one of them. There are probably other things they're using now as well. But yes, it had a real influence on all kinds of crops and all kinds of things. It's even used one of the major problems in orchard production of certain things like peaches and nectarines and other things is a replanting problem. You, again, don't replant very quickly back on some of these old orchards.
Holy smokes, we have a guest on the phone, so let's pick up Jim. Are you there, Jim? Maybe if I put the phone up here. There you go.
Yeah, thanks. I have a question there. I am a home gardener and have been for years in the Seaside, and the soil is pretty sandy, so I have to fortify it every year with the compost, manure, that kind of thing. Anyway, I do have a small strip, like 3 by 10 feet, where I notice I can't plant much of anything, and I'm quite certain I have a wilt in that area. I don't know if it's fusarium or verticillium or whatever wilt it is, but I do have a canister of spray mace. You know, that old stuff that came out before pepper spray.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if I can treat my soil for this wilt with that canister, because it's chloropicrin.
Art?
Yeah, you can. You could. However, to my knowledge,
go ahead.
Neither chloropicrin nor methabromide are registered for any uses around the home.
There you go. Right back. We will be right back. Do stay tuned. Welcome back. This is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson here. Today we're talking with Art Greathead about the toxicity of our industry, specifically the strawberry industry, but also other industries. Got Brussels sprouts, asparagus, tobacco, even international commerce relies on this gas to sterilize the environment and get rid of the harmful organisms that inhabit it. And with regard to that, we had a call from Jim, who has some problems with some soil in his backyard, and he wants to use a common household pesticide that contains chloropicrin. And Art Greathead, what do you have to say to poor Jim there?
Well, the use of chloropicrin around the home, first of all, I don't think there's any registration for its use around the home, and it's such a difficult commodity or product to deal with, and its effect on human on the human is pretty severe without extreme protective. As a matter of fact, it was chloropicrin at one time was used as tear gas, and I don't think you really want to get that around the home at all.
So,
it's not something which is amenable to the home gardener using.
There you go, Jim. So, with respect to it's not being amenable to being used around human beings, it's been banned by international treaty. So, we're going to have to figure out sooner or later how to get by without it. And we seem to be doing that because we're growing a lot of organic berries now, and organic berries don't use any sterilants like methyl bromide or methyl iodine. And I guess that would lead me to ask, can we survive without that gas, Art Greathead?
Well, there have been a lot of advancements made in the organic industry. One of the things they, as far as I know, have not solved is this problem of verticillium, certain other pathogens, and that's going to be a problem with a number of fields still. And frankly, I don't really know how far this organic industry is going to go. As I indicated earlier when we were talking with Michael, that my real close association with the industry ended about 20 years ago. And there have been a lot of things that have occurred since then. However, some of the basic problems still occur.
Art, I've seen estimates that strawberry farmers would lose as much as 36% of their income without the use of methyl bromide. Does that make sense to you?
It makes sense. I don't know whether you can say that across the board. But they are going to certainly lose, I think, a significant portion of their production one way or another.
So it's going to increase.
Assuming the current level right. Of technology that's available now.
So clearly we're going to lose some percentage of our production and our income by eliminating methyl bromide. That's kind of fair to say.
Yeah.
Now, United States is the top strawberry producer in the world, but China is coming online with significant production of its own. And China is not under the same rules of the Montreal Protocol with respect to ending the use its use of methyl bromide. And as a matter of fact, as I understand it, has just completed building the largest methyl bromide plant in the world. So I guess what we're doing is funding our competitor? Is that what we're doing?
Well, we've done that with a lot of commodities in not only food commodities, mm-hmm. but
everything.
Everything we've done that. We tend to set our competitors up in business doing things that we are unable to do or are so much mm-hmm. more expensive for us to do. And that's probably going to have a factor. However, I would assume that much of the Chinese production would be, much of it would probably be related to processing.
Mm-hmm.
So whenever you see commodities rather than just the fresh market.
Sure. And yet we do sell a lot of our strawberries in Asia.
Yes,
yeah. We have a heck of a nice export market for our fresh strawberries to Asia.
Yeah.
And China is closer to Asia than we are.
Yeah, yeah. So all of that enters in with uh-huh. the speed of transportation. Air and other things. It's, and with the refrigeration and handling capabilities that we've got now with modern technology, mm-hmm. it's improved the situation a little bit, yeah.
So the situation as it stands is that we have banned methyl bromide throughout the world, and especially here in the United States, because we are a developed nation, and the developed nations must give it up first. Developing nations like China don't have to give it up yet, and aren't. And so China has built the largest methyl bromide plant in the world, and is now a big consumer of methyl bromide, but also a big exporter of methyl bromide. We're buying our methyl bromide from China. So the question that we're going to pick up when we have a few minutes left to pick it up is, can we compete in a world where we export our dirty industry and our jobs, and where does that leave us? Do stay tuned. We will be right back. Well, folks, you and I want a clean environment. We don't want to live with toxic materials. So we say no to those materials and in so doing regulate our industries out of town. Leave. Go away. And so they go away. But we still want the goods, right? We still want what industry can manufacture. We want those things that make our life fun and interesting. So we run down to the box store, right? And we buy the made in China and think well of ourselves for being so environmentally conscious. And yet all we really have done is foisted off our dirty mess onto someone else and killed all of our jobs. So where is all of this going to take us? Can we survive without industry? Can industry survive without toxicity? What is the answer? Art? Is there any hope in here?
I don't think we're going to go completely out of business. I think historically American ingenuity has been able to supply us and continue to be active in these kinds of continued problems which we seem to face, which almost initially look like they're going to do us under, but they don't. I have a great deal of faith in American ingenuity under pressure. In the strawberry industry, There's been a great deal of advancement, I think, in the last 20 years. When I left the university, it was just a fledgling industry. They have learned some things in the way of handling soils, in the way of stimulating antagonistic organisms. The soil is a very live entity with all kinds of organisms, some good, some bad. And there is a lot of effort being put into the development of a system that stimulates the good organisms, the antagonistic organisms, and diminishes the pathogens in the soil. And there's a lot of work being done practically. I don't know of a university system, plant pathology system in the nation that doesn't have a portion of its research focused on these issues, because it's not only a problem in strawberries. Soil diseases are a problem.
It's a problem with people too, right?
It's a problem with people. We're certainly seeing some results of that.
Hey, Nick, what do you think? Do you think we're going to be able to make it in a world without toxicity?
Yes, very much. There's some varieties of doing it. But I have two questions. Can you explain the fundamentals of why it was used in firefighting? I thought it was used in walnuts before it really evolved into strawberries.
Oh, okay, good. Really quickly. Thank you, Nick.
First of all, probably I was unaware of its use in walnuts, but my guess is it was used in the walnut nurseries where new trees were being grown and to be then transplanted into the orchards. The reason for its very short and brief firefighting history, I don't know.
I know. It scared the hell out of fire. Hey, Art Greathead, thank you so much for joining us. I could spend hours with you. And thank you all out there for tuning in the Food Chain. What do you think? Can industry survive without toxicity? Check us out on the Food Chain at page at metroforum.com.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.